Next, we have Jacob Mullum from Rochester, who's really taken on this timely talk of surgeon attire.
Thank you very much for the privilege. I have no disclosures other than to say it makes me sad that we still have to talk about this, but here we go. We'll go through this pretty quickly. It's important that you recognize that the ARN has been in the business about talking about what we wear for over 40 years now. Their guidelines have actually been revised 10 times since. But we're really talking about the 2015 recommendations, which were the first to invoke OR attire as a potentially controllable factor influencing SSIs. Notably, at the time, the Journal of the ARN had no impact factor, and their peer review process at the time was totally unknown to any of us. That document was actually very extensive. It had 47 different recommendations in it, talking about everything related to the kinds of attire that we wear, how it should be laundered, stored, and importantly, where, when, and how we should get dressed. And then they rated each of these recommendations according to the strength of the evidence. And this was very granular. And some of it's actually downright crazy. Like, this is my favorite one. It says, when getting dressed, team members should avoid contact of the clean attire with the floor or other potentially contaminated surfaces. Not sure how that's even possible as a guy who wears pants to the operating room or how that's enforceable, but nevertheless, this is right there. The real lightning rod was recommendation 3A, which everybody here is familiar with. It says that we have to cover all the hair, completely cover the ear, the scalp, the sideburns, and the nape of the neck. And they rated this as a Category 2 evidence. And along the same time, the AORN was releasing educational materials to their membership, allowing or helping nurses spot violations of these recommendations and giving them tools to interfere. And some of this is obviously very, very derogatory and offensive to surgeons and to anybody who lives in the operating room environment like we do. Nevertheless, at the time, this was the only guideline that was published or a recommendation that was published by a national organization. And therefore, it was accepted into ARC's databases and clearinghouse and ultimately was accepted by CMS and by the Joint Commission as a guideline against which all operating rooms would be measured. And then before you know it, citations and very strict penalties were coming down. And the skull cap was banned from multiple, in fact, almost all operating rooms in this country. And that led to a huge outcry from surgeons. Notably, at the time that all of this was going down, there were at least 9 major organizations that already had in-press guideline statements about OR attire, all published in very high-impact peer-reviewed journals, none of which had any comment whatsoever about attire because there's just no data. So the first response actually came from the college, and this was the Young Fellows Association that ran a large survey study that demonstrated very clearly that no surgeon felt that this would have any impact on SSI rates or outcomes, but that it would have a very deleterious effect on surgeon morale, on surgeon comfort, and also on the team function of the anesthesiologist and the nurses in the operating room. The college shortly thereafter came out with its own statement, and this had 9 different recommendations, the highlight of which says that there's absolutely no evidence that leaving the ears or a limited amount of hair at the back of the neck or sideburns uncovered would contribute to wound infections. And the goal of this really was to kind of restore professionalism and decorum and frankly a critical view at the evidence back to this discussion. But unfortunately, I don't know why this went backwards. This was taken up by both the lay and sort of trade media and was presented as this, you know, dispute between surgeons and nurses. But what this also led to is really the birth of a new area of scientific investigation. And this is the first study that came out of Buffalo that showed no difference with these interventions with 15,000 neurosurgical cases. A big study coming from a hernia database again showed the same thing. And in my hospital, where they nearly shut down our operating room for attire violations, and overnight skull caps were removed, we compared outcomes from nine months before to 9 months after and showed actually no difference. In fact, a slight increase in SSI rates during that time period. This is actually a very elegant study that used very sophisticated methodologies to look at this difference. And over on the left, you can see what a bouffant looks like under electron microscopy. The middle column looks at the top part of the skull cap and the side portion of the skull cap, which, as you know, is 2 different fabrics. And over on the right are the fabric hats, which were also banned universally. And so using very sophisticated studies, we showed that the universally available hat now, the bouffant, was actually associated with much higher particle shedding rates, with greater bacterial counts on settle plates, and owing to a much larger pore size, far greater through permeability and through transmission of particles. And so back in late February, the American College of Surgeons convened really a historic meeting where delegates from the college, from American Society for Anesthesiology, the AORN, Association for Infection Control, Surgical Technologists, and also the Joint Commission were invited to participate. So this is really historic. And everyone was invited to submit any piece of evidence or data or paper that they wanted to review. And together we sat and we went through paper by paper by paper. And I'm very excited to say that this was a very collaborative, mutually respectful conversation where we agreed on what each paper actually says. And from that came this statement, which is published in the journal, in the bulletin of the college a little while ago. Probably the most important statement here says that over the 2 years since the implementation of this, it's become increasingly apparent that this practice of covering the ears is impractical for surgeons and anesthesiologists, and in many cases is counterproductive to our ability to perform optimally in the operating room. Three specific points that everybody agreed to is that recommendations like this are best crafted in a multidisciplinary fashion, including surgeons, anesthesiologists, nurses, and infection prevention specialists. The requirement for ear coverage is entirely unsupported, and this is a little bit funny. There's actually only one reference that was used to back this. It was a single study from the UK where 20 people who work in the operating room were swabbed in three locations. And for those of you who write papers, this is the entire results section of the paper. One sentence that showed that there were a few more bacteria coming from the ear than from the cheek. Shocking. And then finally, the other conclusion is that the available scientific evidence doesn't demonstrate any link between what you put on your head and the likelihood that you'll have an infection for your patient. So the proceedings from this are currently under review. Hopefully they'll be published soon. But it's very, very important that everybody in this room understand where this is coming from. And this is the president of the AORN, who was not included in this. And she says in a recent editorial that the AORN is really at the forefront of evidence-based data. And since 2011, they have 17 guidelines that have been accepted by ARC, and many more are in the pipeline. And that these evidence-based documents and the AORN itself is recognized throughout the healthcare community everywhere as representing the gold standard of perioperative care, and that this should be an enormous source of pride for every member of the AORN, that their organization is so well respected and is creating the benchmarks against which all of us have to comply. And so I'll close with this quote. The AORN is not done. They are working on the 11th iteration of their recommendations, which, despite this meeting, my understanding is not going to be all that different. It will be open for public comment in January, so I encourage everyone to take a leadership role in actually commenting on this. And, you know, stay tuned for another update next year. Thanks.